Welcome to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm your host, Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is podcast Lucky Number 13, originally aired on March 13th, 2010. This series also has an accompanying website with show notes, links, patterns, and projects. You can find everything at mirkwooddesigns.com. Today's bumper music is a traditional Irish tune called The Lark in the Clear Air. About 20 years ago, I learned this song when I decided to learn to play the harp. I fell in love with the music of Canadian singer and songwriter and harpist, and she plays every instrument under the sun. Anyway, Lorena McKennett, and this is on her first album, Elemental, and the version I learned to play for my recital is almost identical to the version that she plays on the album. Now, my niece Jessica has my harp right now, so you'll get to hear me play it on the guitar. So the bumper music again is an Irish song called The Lark in the Clear Air. I hope you enjoy it. You know, sometimes you can find crafty materials in really interesting places. For example, I love MAC Cosmetics. I love their eyeshadow in particular, and I usually order directly from their website. Now, you know, I could go down to the local expensive department store and buy my MAC eyeshadow, but MAC Cosmetics wraps their packages so well. When I see the black box sitting there waiting for me, I know I have some really cool new cosmetics to play with. It's, you know, I look at my face. I don't wear makeup. I don't wear much makeup, I have to admit, but I love to play with it. And I did theater makeup for a while, so I love just trying out new color techniques, especially with eyeshadow. It's, to me, it's sort of like using my eyes as a palette. I don't go out in public like that much, but I just really, it's like playing, you know? Anyway, when I see that box on the porch, knowing that the mailman or the UPS or whoever has delivered a box from MAC Cosmetics, I get really excited. Well, I got a new batch of eyeshadow yesterday. Actually, it was just the case. I had ordered the eyeshadow some time ago and the case was back ordered. But it comes in this really cool black box, and inside the black box, there's all this wrapping that's black tissue paper and some other heavier black paper. Well, I'm not going to throw that away. That's like a treasure trove of crafting possibilities. So what I do is I take the paper out of the box, I make sure I don't tear it, and I iron it for future use. As a matter of fact, if you remember my paper doll, one of my paper dolls from the last podcast, the one that was in the black and the red tissue skirt, the black tissue paper was from a MAC Cosmetics order. Anyway, next time you get a package, don't throw that packing material away, especially if it's like those big sheets of manila colored paper that a lot of packing outfits seem to use now. That is great for all sorts of projects. You can use it, obviously, to draw on or paint on or whatever. You can use it to wad up and make paper mache. You could also just use it just to protect your work area if you're a messy artist like I am. So take a look on my website for my treasure trove of my MAC Cosmetics wrapping materials. I just was so thrilled to get it. Let's see what has happened recently since last podcast. Last podcast was early, as you know, because Teddy was coming into town for, I don't think it's really spring break. I don't think they really call it spring break, but some sort of break. He was off school for a week. And we just had this really nice, low-key week. He has been really stressed out this term because I've mentioned he's a chemical engineering major, and this term he decided to take every possible difficult class all at once. He's taking organic chemistry and fluid dynamics and stuff I can't even pronounce. He's been just really stressed out, so he wanted to come home and basically sit around the house and do nothing, and we pretty much accomplished that goal. My husband Ted took a vacation last week also, so the three of us sat around the house and did jigsaw puzzles and played games and looked up words in the dictionary and watched some movies. It was so nice just to have really quiet time with family rather than trying to run around and accomplish a lot of things. We did go for a walk in a park that we discovered in Ypsilanti, Michigan. It's right along I-94, the freeway, and it's this park. I posted pictures on my blog, actually a little slideshow kind of thing on my blog. But the park, I have to talk about it. It's the coolest little place. It's along the Huron River, which opens out into lakes along its way, meandering through Michigan, this area is called Ford Lake, and there is a series of little islands that are all connected by these beautiful arched bridges. And last week was very cold, snowy, icy. There's ice still on the lake. And there were these swans swimming around in between the ice floes, which I thought was really cool. I sort of thought swans would migrate. I guess they don't. And I know that in the summer, I always see a very, very large flock, swarm. I don't know what a group of swans is called, but a large group of swans on the lake right in this area. So I can tell you, I will be taking regular walks in this location. It's so beautiful. Very inspiring. I took lots of pictures, close-up pictures of like the edges of the ice and the shapes of the bridges, because I'm really inspired by that sort of thing. So he was home. I mentioned he sings bass in the U of M Men's Glee Club, and this very night, even as I'm recording this podcast, he is on stage with the U of M Men's Glee Club is performing with the Harvard Men's Glee Club right now in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'm a terrible mother. I had other plans for tonight, and I just found out about the concert. So my podcast listeners come before my son's concert. I know that sounds crazy, but he's got his big, huge 150th year concert coming up in April, so it's not like I'm going to miss much. It would have been cool to see the Harvard Glee Club, but, you know, I'm sure that the U of M Men's Glee Club is better anyway. So I need to apologize to people who are waiting for the rewards for gallery submissions. They were all packaged and ready to go, but there was a bit of confusion at the post office, and my sweet little packages to all of you gallery people were rejected by my post office. I'll talk about more about that in the fiber arts segment, because I've got a little bit more to say about that issue. But I just wanted to let you know that I haven't forgotten about you, and I will be getting back to the post office to mail them this week. And also, while I'm thinking of it, I kind of hadn't put an end on my rewards for gallery submissions. I now am going to put March 31st of 2010 as the end date for my rewards for gallery submissions. So you still have another couple weeks to submit images of projects that are inspired by my blog, either, you know, things that you've made using my patterns or things that you've made because I've talked about this or that. Send me photos, and if you do, I will send you a real live reward in the mail. Now, again, you have two more weeks. I will end the rewards program on March 31st, 2010. You can always submit images after that, but I'm not going to guarantee you're going to get a reward after that point. But for those of you who are waiting for your little rewards, I promise they'll be in the mail this week once I straighten out my packaging issue. And I'll talk more about that coming up. If you're a follower of my blog, you already know that I discovered a really talented artist of the German art of Sharon Schnitte. Now, I know I'm pronouncing that wrong. I wish Teddy was here to say that word in the microphone for me so he could, you know, let you know how it's really pronounced. But I'll just call it paper cutting. Her name is Cindy Ferguson, and she offers a free paper cutting template on her blog each Tuesday. So I'd like you to go there, download one of those templates or paper cutting patterns, and give it a try. Alert podcast listener Anne emailed me about this last week because the template last week was a character from Alice in Wonderland. And I tried it. Probably within the hour of Anne's email, I was downloading that template, gathering my supplies, and cutting out Alice and her flamingo. And it didn't turn out too badly. I'm pretty pleased with it. I'm still not really accurate with my X-Acto knife. Now, I am using the number 11 blade. I'm using the very tip of it, and my blades are fresh out of the package. But I think I just need to learn. I need to learn the muscle motions to get that down. But you'll find a link to Cindy's website and to the book Paper Cuts. She's got a lot of paper cuts featured in the book called Paper Cuts. You'll find links to both of those on the blog, so check that out. And you'll also see, I think I did put another one of my paper cuts out there. If not, I'll make sure I put one up there when I'm done podcasting tonight. Another thing I've been working on are the Japanese knot bags. I love these little bags. They are so cute. I mentioned this before too, and you've seen the pictures on the blog, hopefully, from last week when I made my first two attempts. Now, I have taken the pattern which is out there on the web. And I've sort of drafted my own version, and I'm going to be offering it in the next podcast, the March 31st podcast. It's going to be kind of an Easter theme. I will be offering my versions of the Japanese knot bag. And the one of them is going to have patterns for the Japanese quilting method of sashiko. So I hope you tune in next time for my Japanese knot bags, including the tutorial on sashiko. And there's an announcement coming up. I'm not sure when this is all going to happen, but there is an online discussion board called Big Tent. And there is a large group of us quilty podcasters who are going to get together and make like a gigantic tent. And I think we're having little sub mini tents underneath it. So I'll be talking more about that. Or if you listen to Brylin or Allison or Darla or Kelly, Jennifer, Jean, and everybody else, I apologize if I've forgotten your name, to mention your name. I haven't forgotten your name. I just maybe didn't mention it. Stay tuned to their podcasts, to my podcast, with an announcement about a group discussion board community where we can all get together and kind of support each other and get to know each other's fans. Because the more people who find out about the podcasters who are out there, I think the more podcasts there will be, more projects there will be, more support. It'll be pretty exciting. So I'm looking forward to this. Now, this was Allison's idea, I believe, but Darla from Scientific Quilter is going to be the one who's kind of, you know, she's so scientific and so logical. She's going to figure out how it's all going to work. So I'm looking forward to this new venture. It's kind of exciting. And by the way, lucky podcast number 13 marks the final installment of my Alice in Wonderland Red Work series. Today is the title block. It says Alice in Wonderland in very pretty letters, and it's got some little Victorian flourishes on it. I haven't decided what series I'm going to offer next. I might take a break from offering a free series of patterns until I come up with something exciting. Who knows what's coming up? I don't know, but you'll find out probably about the same time I do. There is a photo of the Alice in Wonderland block and also a link to the pattern, the free pattern on the website. Stay tuned for the fiber arts segment. Today's topic is fabric postcards and my post office drama. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Fiber Arts segment. Today I'm going to talk about fabric postcards. I've heard about fabric postcards for years, and I often wondered what the post office really thought about something non-standard being mailed, so I decided to give it a try. And I've also heard so many different experiences about the actual mailing of them. People insisting that the cards could be mailed using regular postcard postage, some insisting they'd require a surcharge, some saying that they always just mailed their fabric postcards in envelopes anyway so they wouldn't be damaged. You know, as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to make a fabric postcard, I think you should just choose to mail it as a postcard. Don't hide it in an envelope, because to me, in my mind, part of the charm with a fabric postcard is seeing all the smiling faces of people who are charmed on its little postal journey. I can just see, you know, the person who's stamping it thinking, oh, isn't this cute? And the person who's sorting it thinking, isn't this cute? You know, I probably am going overboard there. But to me, if you're going to make a postcard, I think you should mail it as a postcard. So before I get on with the actual making of the postcard, let me share with you my experience of mailing my postcard. I'll be honest and say I think it really depends on what clerk you get at the post office and maybe what kind of day he or she's having. I typically frequent a really tiny little post office in my area. It's not my home post office. It's just one I just like going to, because usually there's nobody in line and I'm always treated really well. The clerks have been super well. I took my little postcard along with all of the little rewards boxes that I mentioned to that little post office, expecting to be able to chat with the really nice clerk who's usually there. And I also wanted to sort of interview her to see what postal clerks thought of stuff like fabric postcards, you know, whether they made them smile or whether they're annoyed at them or they think they're stupid or whatever. Well, when I got there was this clerk I didn't recognize. She was very businesslike and very brusque, and immediately I knew we had a problem. I had all these little boxes all labeled and ready to be mailed to all of the people as my rewards for the gallery submissions. Now, these boxes are sold by a major packaging supplier as mailers, meaning they're designed to go through our postal system. And I've already mailed several items using them with no problem whatsoever. Well, this clerk said they were too small for the postal system, and she refused to take them. Even though I said, you know, I've mailed a bunch of them at this very post office with no issues, she said, oh, well, they didn't know what they were doing, and so I'm going to have to talk to my clerks. And frankly, I don't think they were actually her clerks. I think she was a substitute person. Well, anyway, she and I nearly had an argument because I was insisting that I'd mailed them before, and as a matter of fact, before I actually ordered the boxes, the mailing boxes, I actually went to the post office website and I did research, and I couldn't find anything that mentioned the minimum size of a package. Now, if I missed it, shame on me, but I think I searched fairly well. So then I was in a bad mood, and it takes a lot to get me in a bad mood. I put my little postcard on the counter, and the postal clerk didn't even bat an eye. I watched as she verified the thickness, and it definitely qualified as a postcard because she fit it through the little template thing. I watched her do it. And then she said, even though this says postcard, it can't be mailed as a postcard because of its thickness and the surface design. Right. Well, I swear she made that up. I saw her put it in the measuring device. It fit. It was 4x6, which is a template size for a postcard. Well, by then I was just too mad and kind of upset to argue with her, so I paid the extra money to mail it. And I think it's like maybe twice the price of a postcard to mail a regular envelope. Well, whatever the deal. I just sent it on its merry way. And, you know, the really sad part is I never got to ask my questions about how clerks felt about mailing unusual items. Well, obviously, this clerk probably is not happy with that whole concept. But next time I go, I hope that my favorite clerk is there because I really would like to chat with her just to find out, you know, what's the weirdest item that she's ever seen mailed or heard about being mailed? I'm not talking about dangerous things like chemicals or bombs or whatever. I'm talking about what kind of wacky things might they have seen. I have heard that a few years ago, it was all the rage to take one of those 2-liter pop bottles, you know, those plastic ones, and remove the label, fill it with all sorts of stuff, put a mailing label on it, and just mail it as the bottle. Well, I think that's kind of a cool idea. Can you imagine, like, filling a bottle and sending it off to a college student? You could fill the bottle with candy and all sorts of treats and stuff. I guess now I'm beginning to wonder whether you can actually do that. Maybe it's not allowed anymore, or maybe it's just really discouraged or frowned on. Well, anyway, next time I go to the post office this coming week to mail all those packages that I have to repackage now, I wasted all that money on my mailing boxes. Well, I hope that my favorite clerk is there, and I'll have a chance to ask her, and I'll give you a report. Okay, so now on to the actual making of the fabric postcard. Sorry about that. I digressed there, didn't I? Well, fabric postcards are sort of like mini quilts that are bound to cardstock postcards. My project sheet has two different postcard backs that you can print onto cardstock, two different designs, or you can make your own. I've seen some fabric postcards that are entirely fabric, including the postage side, but I wasn't quite sure how the postage would be adhered. I suppose maybe you could zigzag it on, but I wasn't really confident that would work. But by using a cardstock postage side, you can write your message, address the card, and stamp it just like a regular postcard. So you can make a little quilt that measures 4x6, which is the size I recommend, the maximum size that I recommend. Or decorate your fabric in any way, or simply use a novelty fabric, which is what I chose to do for this podcast. My sister-in-law, Michelle, I talk about her all the time because she's like the most generous person in the world. She's my quilt pusher. I guess I'm the quilt junkie and she's my supplier or something. She's always sending me boxes of treats and fabrics and books and any quilt item you can think of, Michelle has sent to me. She let me borrow her embroidery machine for a year just because she wanted me to learn how to use it and quilt with it. Well, anyway, she sent me a box recently that contained the stash of different kinds of fabrics that were fabulous. There's Easter fabric in there. There's Christmas fabric, there is St. Patrick's Day fabric, anything you can think of, she stuck in this box. It was just great. Well, I decided to use a novelty St. Patrick's Day fabric from the gift that she sent, and I found a little motif on the fabric that was just perfect for my postcard. My project sheet also includes what I'm calling a fussy cut viewer. It's like you cut out the section of the project sheet, and it acts like a frame, and you can move it around your novelty fabric to find just the right motif. So there's an explanation on the project sheet to show you how to do that, along with what I'm calling a fussy cut viewer. I don't know if that's the real name for it, but hey, it works for me. So once I chose the motif and I cut it out, I quilted it to a piece of Peltex. Peltex, or it's also another brand, is Timtex. It's a really stiff interfacing that will help keep your fabric postcard quite rigid. And it's made, the Peltex, I think, is made by Pellon, and it's available in bolts in your regular fabric store's regular interfacing section. So I machine quilted my little novelty fabric like a little quilt, and I just outlined the images on the fabric. And then once that was done, I stitched all the way around to kind of really secure the fabric and the Peltex together. And then I stitched that to the fabric postcard. And then what I did after that was I added actual fabric binding. But you don't have to use binding. You can just use a satin stitch or even a fairly close zigzag stitch all the way around. Basically, what you want to do is really make sure that your fabric is well secured to the cardstock postcard. So now that you have your fabric postcard, you need to mail it. And after my experience, I strongly recommend that you don't assume anything and you actually just take it to your post office and have it hand processed. Yes, you can mail it in an envelope, but like I said before, that kind of defeats the entire postcard purpose. And I just love the idea that your little piece of art will be handled by all these people along its little postcard journey, and maybe it will brighten somebody's day. Well, I would love to hear from any postal professionals about this, whether you know about minimum package sizing, whether you have any stories to tell about unusual packages that you've seen. Just email me your stories or share your comments on my blog. So the tutorial and the photo series of how I made my postcard is on the blog, mirkwooddesigns.com. Stay tuned for the paper art segment. Today's topic is artist trading cards, including an envelope that is just the right size to hold about 10 of your ATCs. Welcome back. This is the Paper Arts segment, and today we're going to talk about artist trading cards, or ATCs. I'll tell you how to make the most of one piece of cardstock, and I will also provide an envelope template that's just the right size that will hold about 10 of your ATCs. Several years ago, I used to belong to a group called the Carving Consortium. Actually, I'm still a member of the group. I just haven't been active for probably 8 or 9 years. The website is on my blog if you would like to check it out. And when I was in the group, we had many swaps that we could join. One of the popular ones was artist trading cards. And if you're not familiar with artist trading cards, they're little works of art that you create about the size of a credit card or 2.5 by 3.5 inches. And because this was a soft block carving group, all of our ATCs featured stamps that we had carved ourselves. I have since seen some pretty amazing ATCs using every creative technique under the sun. Each one is unique, like a little tiny work of art. This is a project that everyone, children, teens, adults, scouting groups, church groups, would enjoy. You can do this as any kind of a project. You could take it perhaps to a nursing home and work with some of the people there. They could create little tiny miniature works of art, trade them with their friends. You could have younger children create an alphabet set of ATCs, maybe a collection of birds and flowers. Think of the possibilities. This is a great project. And what's really nice, it's not overwhelming because you don't have a giant canvas sitting there intimidating you. This is a piece of paper, a piece of cardstock that's 2.5 inches by 3.5 inches. Surely you can take a couple minutes out of your day and create just this little tiny piece of art. If you create an artist trading card every day for a week, you'll end up with 7 artist trading cards that will fit in your envelope, and you will have created 7 tiny works of art. That's a few minutes out of every day. I think everybody should give this a try. The project sheet for the ATCs consists of two things. There's a cutting diagram and an envelope template. The cutting diagram is just that. It's an illustration with the measurements and how best to make the most of one sheet of cardstock. Now, I'm talking about, since I'm in the United States, we use our standard paper size is 8.5 by 11. Our standard cardstock would be that size. You can get 10 ATCs from one sheet of cardstock if you follow the diagram. The envelope typically holds 10 ATCs, but that really does depend on how embellished you make them. Now, I don't have a photographic process of making the ATCs because I don't want to influence you in any way. I do have images on the website of ATCs I've made about 9 years ago, so you can kind of see some of the ones I made back when I belonged to the Carvin Consortium. And I also have some that you can see in the tutorial, I guess it would be called, the project sheet of the ones that I made just for this particular project. And you can see the cute envelope. I made it out of red paper, so it really stands out. You can also decorate your envelope, of course. Now, as I said, I didn't want to show you my process of making them because I want your artwork to be just that, your artwork. But I would love if you would like to trade or share ATCs with me. Let me know in the comments section or give me an email. I'll be happy to trade ATCs with anyone who would like to. Maybe we'll have a swap of artist trading cards. I think that's kind of a cool idea. Now, I did not plan on saying that, so now that I've said it, I feel obligated to honor that challenge. If anybody would like to make artist trading cards and trade with me, I'm up for the challenge. Again, you will find complete instructions on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. Now, up next is the recipe segment. And since this podcast is being aired around St. Patrick's Day, we are making traditional Irish coffee. Welcome back. In today's recipe segment, we are making traditional Irish coffee, and I'll also share some information about coffee, about Irish whiskey, about the history of Irish coffee, and I will also tell you my story about learning to float the cream on top of the coffee. First, some facts. Did you know that the darker the roast of coffee, the less caffeine there is? As coffee beans roast, caffeine is removed from them. Therefore, that strong cup of espresso actually has less caffeine than a cup of regular coffee. So the next time you're at Starbucks and you ask for a shot or two of espresso added to your cup of coffee, you're actually diluting the caffeine. Well, just a smidgen anyway. I like to grind my own beans, and I typically buy beans called New York Blend or Colombian beans from a local market. Both of these are light roasts, meaning that there's more caffeine in them. Sometimes I also buy green beans and I roast them myself. I actually have a coffee roaster. That thing makes so much smoke, I have to roast my beans on the front porch. I'm sure the neighbors wonder what the heck is going on over at the Zaroff household when I'm roasting coffee beans. My favorite beans are Jamaican Blue Mountain, but they are very, very expensive. The first time I ever had Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee was when I was working in Japan. And I was wondering how in the heck they could sell a cup of coffee for $10. And I didn't understand it, but I'll tell you, that was some pretty fabulous tasting coffee. That's actually when I first began drinking coffee on a regular basis. Well, now I do buy green Jamaican Blue Mountain beans on the internet. And then when they come, I store them in an airtight, very dark place. I don't put them in the freezer or refrigerator because I've heard that that's not really good for coffee beans. Don't know whether that's true or not, but I don't do that. I put them in a cool, dark place. That seems to work for me. And then I roast them as I need them, and I grind the roast beans as I need them. I don't store ground coffee at all. Anytime I make a cup of coffee, I grind my beans from scratch. It doesn't take that long. You know, you do what works for you. This works for me. Also, I use the brewing method I use is called the French press method. I know in other countries that maker is called something else. I can't remember. A plunger method, maybe some countries call it. But in the United States, it's called the French press method. And it's a really simple device. You heat the water. First, you grind your beans, and you grind them very coarsely. And you put the beans in the French press coffee maker, and which is just like basically a glass cylinder. And then you boil water. You pour enough water on top for however much you're making. And it's usually 2 tablespoons of ground coffee for 6 ounces of boiling water. You pour the boiling water on top, and I usually make only a single serving at a time when I make coffee because my husband doesn't drink coffee at all during the week. And then you press the plunger filter down till it's just touching the surface of the coffee, and you let it steep for 4 minutes, and then you have this really fantastic, smooth cup of coffee. So I like the French press method. If you look at the pictures that go along with the process of making the Irish coffee, you'll see my French press, and I explain how I grind the beans and so forth and that. But that is the way I prefer to make my coffee. My sisters all have the Keurig coffee makers. And yeah, you can make a really, you know, pretty reasonably flavored cup of coffee really fast. But in my opinion, I like the whole process of making the coffee, from the roasting to the grinding to the brewing and obviously to the drinking. I like that whole sort of ceremony of it. I'm also a really big fan of doing tea kind of that way also. I like ceremony when I do things, I guess. And for the next little tidbit, did you know that Irish coffee, while originating in Ireland, is really much more of an American drink? The first Irish coffee was made by an astute chef at what is now Shannon Airport as a pick-me-up for some weary American travelers who had just arrived from a harrowing flight over the Atlantic back in the 1940s. I understand that it was a cold and drizzly and rainy night. They came into the restaurant that in what is now Shannon Airport, and the chef, knowing that they were all bedraggled and, you know, cold and weary, made them this concoction, and it was basically coffee with whiskey, Irish whiskey in it. And when one of the persons asked, well, is this Brazilian coffee, thinking this is a very unusual way to serve coffee, he said, no, this is Irish coffee. And therefore, Irish coffee was born. And then a restaurant in California began serving it, and now it is, well, a traditional American drink, I guess you would say, even though it's called Irish coffee. On to the whiskey segment of the show. Now, my sipping whiskey of preference is Crown Royal, which is a very smooth blended whiskey from Canada. But for Irish coffee, I do prefer traditional Irish whiskey, which I really find much sweeter than most whiskey. The top three best-selling Irish whiskeys in the world are, in order, Jameson, which is a product of the Republic of Ireland, and that is my Irish whiskey of choice. There is also Tullamore Dew, which is number two in sales, and that is a product of also of the Republic of Ireland. And there's also Bushmills, which comes in third, which is a product of Northern Ireland. Those are the three Irish whiskeys that I see most often. Obviously, there are a lot more out there, but I just wanted to kind of give a plug to those three in case they need my address and want to thank me very much for mentioning their brands on my very famous podcast. I use Jameson 12-year-old whiskey in my recipe. Now, making the coffee part of the Irish coffee is the easy part. As I mentioned, you start with freshly brewed coffee, and then you add a couple of lumps of sugar or 2 teaspoons of sugar. It can be white sugar or brown sugar, and then you add the whiskey. But it's not Irish coffee without the cream floating on the top, and that's where I ran into a lot of trouble. Traditional Irish coffee is not topped with whipped cream. It is topped with a layer of heavy cream floated on top of the coffee, and it makes it a really pretty layer, which is why it's always served in a clear glass. You can see the dark coffee, and then all of a sudden you see the beautiful layer of cream on the top. Now, there is a little area where the cream is just beginning to blend with the coffee, but it's pretty distinct layers that you can see. And I was having so much trouble getting my cream to float on top of the coffee. Initially, it would just start sinking immediately, and while it still tasted pretty good, it wasn't Irish coffee, because when you have Irish coffee, you actually drink it through the layer of cream. You never mix it up together. Well, I was discouraged. I mean, I was having a good time testing the recipe, I admit, but I was kind of discouraged because I wanted to make this recipe work, and I wanted to tell you how you could also make the cream float on top of this, you know, the nice coffee that you've just made. Well, I went on the internet and I did all sorts of research. I tried all the tricks that, you know, floated on the back of a spoon and this and that. Well, nothing was working for me. I did learn a lot about the physics of making Irish coffee. I learned about fluid dynamics and liquid density. You know, well, that was a little bit kind of way off the charts as far as I'm concerned. I didn't want to have to worry about that. So a friend of mine, Janice, suggested that perhaps I should froth the cream slightly. Well, I didn't want to make whipped cream, but I figured it wouldn't hurt if I used a small whisk to kind of just whisk the cream up, to give it, to emulsify it a little bit, get some air into it so that it would make it a little bit lighter and would float. And that was the secret. I did not whip the cream, so I'm not cheating. What I did was I put it in a small bowl and I used a small whisk, or you can use a fork, and I whisked it up till it just began to get a little bit foamy. It was not whipped cream, and I did not add sugar to it. There's already sugar in the coffee itself. So then I took a spoon, and I very carefully just laid it on top of the coffee, and it didn't sink. I was so happy when I finally got it to work, and I have succeeded since then to successfully float the cream on top of the coffee every time. Now, Janice also mentioned that there is a tool that people who make a lot of Irish coffee use. It's called a turtle, and it actually looks like a turtle, and it hooks over the sides of the Irish coffee mug. It's also used to make black and tans, which are a layered drink of beer and Guinness stout. And that's also a very popular Irish drink too, I guess. And there's also called a half and half, which is a different kind. I think that's harp ale. Is the half and half with the Guinness stout, and the black and tan is Bass Ale with the Irish stout to make the black and tan. I think I just said that. Well, anyway, this thing called a turtle hooks over the side of the glass, and you very slowly pour the cream over the top of it, and that helps to layer the cream on top of the coffee. Now, I ordered one. It came in the mail today, but I have not had a chance to test it. So thanks, Janice, for all the information and suggestions. I think maybe Janice drinks a lot of Irish coffee? I'm not sure. Well, I hope you give the Irish coffee a try, but maybe not too many times. But, you know, I want to talk about something else, too. Speaking of too many times, if you want to have sort of the Irish coffee effect, but you don't drink alcohol or you don't want to have alcohol that particular time, you can use a product that is sold as a coffee syrup. It's an Irish cream coffee syrup, and all you do, my recipe talks about this, you would replace both the sugar and the whiskey with the Irish cream syrup. It tastes a little bit like Bailey's Irish cream. So many people said, oh, well, of course you put Bailey's Irish cream in your Irish coffee, don't you? Well, no, that's not part of the actual recipe, and I've not tried it that way. I'm sure it's really wonderful and delicious, but in my opinion, ruined the Bailey's Irish cream for me. I just like it by itself. Well, so if you want to make a non-alcoholic version, you can, in a lot of coffee sections now in the stores, they have the various flavored syrups. So you would choose the Irish cream syrup, and you would use that again in place of the sugar and the whiskey. And then you would just top it with the cream, as I just described. You would whip your cream slightly or froth your cream slightly and lay it on top of the coffee. You would have a non-alcoholic Irish coffee. Both the recipe and the photographic process of making Irish coffee are on the blog. And as they say in Ireland, sláinte. Next is the grab bag. And since I've already talked so much already, it's going to be pretty short. But I'll share with you a couple of stories about how I've celebrated St. Patrick's Day in past years. Welcome to the grab bag. This time around, I thought I would just share a couple of stories about my celebrating St. Patrick's Day in the past. When we were first married, Ted and I lived in Detroit, and not far from our house was a little Irish pub called the Tipperary Pub. And I'll tell you, we usually steered clear of this place, especially on St. Patrick's Day, because the place was jam-packed. It was so crowded, but, you know, one year we thought we'd venture there. We didn't have anything better to do. When we walked into the place, it was so crowded with happy Irish folks, both real Irish and honorary Irish. And I'm pretty short. So to me, it was just the sea of chests. And at one point, the crowd was so thick that my feet actually left the floor. And I was sort of like floating along, being carried along in the sea of people. It was sort of surreal, but it was so crowded. And there was no making one's way to the bar. So we had to shout our order as best we could to the barman, pass the money over people's heads. Many people touched our money until it got to the bar. And then the drinks were like passed over the people back to us. It's a wonder, number one, that the money made it to the bar, and number two, that the drinks made it back to us. But the people were so honest. I guess they're all celebrating Irish people are happy, honest people. I don't know. And as you know, for several years, I sang professionally, specializing in folk music, but I sang just about anything that people wanted, and I would often sing in bars on St. Patrick's Day. Those were, of all the times I ever sang in bars, including New Year's Eve, St. Patrick's Day was always the strangest. I mean, people would start partying first thing in the morning, and they would still be there. They were probably there long after I was gone and home. It just amazes me, the constitution some people have. And I would sing the same Irish songs over and over because people wanted to sing along and they would dance along. It was really fun. I enjoyed doing it so much, but my, lots of partying, at least here in the States on St. Patrick's Day. And my understanding is in Ireland, it's not celebrated in quite the same way. If I understand correctly, St. Patrick's Day in Ireland is actually, you know, it's a holy day and they observe it by going to Mass and kind of having a quiet day around the house. I may be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that nobody can beat the people here in the States for celebrating St. Patrick's Day the way that we do, what with all the parades and singing and dancing and so forth. We do a pretty good job of celebrating. Well, with that, I'd like to wish you all a happy St. Patrick's Day and leave you with this traditional Irish blessing. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. The rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Thanks, everyone, for spending time with me again. I hope you learned something new today and that I've inspired your creativity at least a little bit. If you'd like me to talk about something in particular, or if you have ideas for projects or recipes, please drop me a line. My email is ruthann@mirkwooddesigns.com. And don't forget about the gallery for the next couple weeks. If you share photos of your creations inspired by my podcast or templates, you'll earn a reward. The offer is good only until March 31st, 2010, and only one reward per person, so hurry and get yours today. By the way, if you've missed a project, tutorial, or recipe, you can always go to my blog, and along the right column, there are links to my projects, recipes, podcast pages, as well as a link to your gallery. Click on those to go directly to all of the projects, tutorials, and recipes without having to sift through all of my blogs. Until next time, this is Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff with Mirkwood Designs, Adventures in Creativity. And remember, creativity isn't a race, it's an adventure.